Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really significant Connecticut divorce case, Finan v. Finan. This isn't just about, splitting assets after a marriage ends. It digs into what happens when one spouse's financial actions before a legal separation. Well, how that can come into play during the divorce proceedings.
Right.
We're going to explore how that kind of pre-separation financial behavior can actually impact how a court divides marital property.
Exactly. And for you law students tuning in, this deep dive is particularly relevant. Finan v. Finan is a key case for understanding the principles of equitable distribution in Connecticut.
Okay.
And, what kind of financial evidence courts will consider, especially concerning allegations of financial mismanagement leading up to a divorce. It gives some crucial insights into how Connecticut courts try to aim for, well, financial fairness when a marriage dissolves.
Yeah, definitely. We've pulled together a pretty comprehensive set of resources for this. Our usual podcast guidance, a detailed case brief, a standard legal brief, and even some perplexity analysis just to make sure we're covering all the critical angles.
Good stuff.
Our goal today is really to break down the core legal principles at play here, the Connecticut Supreme Court's ultimate ruling, and most importantly, what this all means for your future practice. We're really zeroing in on this concept known as dissipation of marital assets. Okay, let's unpack this.
So the case of Finan v. Finan, it centered on the divorce of Meredith and John Finan. They'd been married for 23 years, and their divorce back in 2005 involved two minor children.
Right.
The central legal question that eventually reached the Connecticut Supreme Court concerned the fair division or equitable distribution of their marital assets and also the various financial orders issued by the lower courts.
And it wasn't just about dividing up the, the obvious assets like the house or retirement funds, was it? There is this underlying question of whether John had perhaps been financially irresponsible with marital funds before they legally separated.
Right.
This brings us to that crucial term, dissipation. In the context of this case, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, in this legal context, dissipation of marital assets refers to Meredith's allegations of wasteful spending or other forms of financial misconduct by John that happened before their legal separation.
Okay.
The fundamental question for the court was whether this type of pre-separation financial behavior should even be a factor when a court is dividing marital property. And tied into that was a procedural question. Did Meredith properly present her evidence of this alleged dissipation to the trial court in a way that allowed the appellate courts to review it later? Like, did she follow the right steps?
Right. So we have the substance, the alleged wasteful spending, and then this procedural question about whether the court could even look at the evidence for it. Now, to understand the Supreme Court's decision, we need to look at the legal framework in Connecticut for divorce, specifically General Statutes, Section 46B81. What does that statute say about how assets should be divided?
Okay, so Connecticut law requires the equitable distribution of marital property when a marriage ends. Now, equitable, it doesn't necessarily mean a straight 50-50 split.
Not always equal.
Exactly.
Right.
Instead, Section 46B81 tells courts to consider various factors, including each party's contribution to the acquisition, but also, and this is really key for our discussion, the preservation or the depletion of those assets.
Yeah, depletion.
Yes, depletion. This is where the legal relevance of dissipation comes into focus. And in Finan, the Supreme Court provided a clearer framework, really a new test, for determining when this depletion or dissipation can actually be taken into account.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. What exactly is this new test that the Supreme Court established?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that pre-separation dissipation of marital assets can be considered by trial courts, but only if it happened during one of two specific time periods.
Yeah.
First, in contemplation of divorce or separation, basically, when divorce was a real possibility that the parties likely knew about.
Okay.
Second, while the marriage was in serious jeopardy or had already reached a point of irretrievable breakdown, this focus on the timing of the alleged dissipation is absolutely critical.
Okay, so it's not just about any bad financial decision a spouse made during the marriage. It has to be linked to a period when the relationship was already in serious trouble or divorce was, like, on the table.
Precisely.
Now, let's look at the Finan situation more closely. What were some of the key facts that brought this case up to the appellate level?
Right, so as we mentioned, it was a long-term marriage, 23 years. At the time of the divorce proceedings, they had two minor kids. John, the husband, had a reported base salary of about $225,000. Meredith, the ex-wife, she tried to present evidence in the trial court, alleging that John had engaged in wasteful pre-separation spending. This included what she described as unexplained withdrawals of funds. Her claims apparently involved instances of significant cash withdrawals shortly before separation that just lacked a clear justification.
But the trial court didn't actually allow that evidence to be presented, did they? Do we know why the trial court made that decision?
Well, our sources don't spell out the trial court's exact reasoning, but it seems there was maybe a reluctance to consider financial conduct that occurred before the formal legal process of divorce had even begun.
Mm.
Trial courts sometimes hesitate, you know, to dig too deep into the financial history of a marriage before the divorce papers are actually filed.
Okay, so Meredith tries to appeal this decision, but then she runs into a procedural issue. What happened when she took it to the appellate court?
Yeah, this is a crucial lesson for all you future lawyers out there. When Meredith appealed to the appellate court, that court actually declined to review her claim about the excluded evidence of dissipation.
Why?
The reason. Her financial report, the document which contained all the details of John's alleged wasteful spending, hadn't been formally marked as an exhibit during the trial proceedings.
Wow. So a seemingly small procedural detail, it almost completely stopped the appellate court from even looking at the substance of her claim.
Almost, yeah.
But the Supreme Court ultimately got involved. What did they rule regarding the dissipation issue itself and also this procedural misstep?
Right. The Supreme Court did step in and provided some really important clarification. On the dissipation issue, they clearly stated that trial courts do have the authority to consider pre-separation dissipation of marital assets.
Okay.
But only if it falls within those specific timeframes they outlined, either in contemplation of divorce or during a period of irretrievable breakdown of the marriage. This set a much clearer standard for Connecticut courts going forward.
And what about Meredith's failure to formally mark her financial report as an exhibit back at the trial? What did they say about that?
Yeah, on that point, the Supreme Court ruled that in this particular case, the appellate court should have reviewed Meredith's claim, even though the financial report wasn't formally marked as an exhibit.
Oh, interesting. Why?
Their reasoning was basically that the document was still part of the official record of the trial court proceedings, even if not properly marked. However, and this is a very important caveat, they explicitly stated that this decision was made in the interest of judicial economy for this specific case.
Ah,
and right. Should not be interpreted as a general rule or, you know, recommended practice. They really hammered home that properly marking all evidence during trial remains crucial. Failing to do that can have huge negative consequences for your client's ability to appeal down the road.
So it was kind of a break for Meredith in this specific instance, but a very clear warning shot to future lawyers. Follow the procedural rules for evidence meticulously.
Absolutely. Don't rely on exceptions.
Now, I seem to recall there was another piece to the Supreme Court's ruling in Finan, something about a tax filing order.
Yes, that's correct. The Supreme Court also looked at an order from the trial court that had required Meredith and John to file a joint income tax return for the year before their divorce was finalized.
Mm.
The Supreme Court actually vacated this particular order. They found it was an improper overreach of judicial authority.
Why improper?
Well, their rationale was that once a divorce is finalized, the individuals are legally and financially separate entities. The court generally doesn't have the power to compel them to engage in joint financial actions, like filing taxes together after they're divorced.
That makes perfect sense. You can just imagine the potential for, like, continued conflict and complications if divorced parties were forced to keep filing jointly.
Exactly.
So, taking a step back then, what are the broader implications of this Finan decision? Why is it so important for law students to really get their heads around this case?
Well, for one thing, Finan kind of brings Connecticut's legal stance on considering pre-separation financial behavior more in line with how many other states already handle these kinds of claims,
yeah,
using similar timeframes. It also reinforces the principle that while trial courts have considerable discretion in making financial orders in divorce cases, that discretion isn't unlimited, especially when it comes to reviewing evidence of potential asset dissipation. There are rules and standards.
And for the aspiring family lawyers listening, what's the key practical takeaway here beyond just knowing the legal rule itself?
I think the most significant practical takeaway, as we've kind of highlighted already, is the absolute necessity of meticulously following evidence preservation rules during trial.
Right. Marking those exhibits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court's decision to review the unmarked financial report, that was an exception based on the specific circumstances of this case. It's not a signal that those rules can be ignored. Law students really need to understand that to effectively represent their clients and make sure their claims can be reviewed on appeal, Every single piece of evidence must be formally marked and properly admitted into the record. No shortcuts.
Yeah, that seems crystal clear. I remember the court used a really insightful analogy to explain dissipation in relation to Connecticut law. Can you remind us of that?
Yes, they did. The court described dissipation as essentially the direct opposite, the antithesis of preserving marital assets.
Okay.
They directly linked this concept to the language in Section 46B81, which, as we said, instructs courts to consider each party's contribution to both the preservation and the depletion of marital assets.
So it fits right into the statute.
Precisely. So if one spouse is found to be, you know, wastefully spending or maybe even hiding assets during that critical period when the marriage is failing, the court can consider that as negatively impacting the total pot of marital property that needs to be divided fairly.
Yeah.
Think of it like a shared bank account for a big vacation. Preserving assets is like both people consistently saving up. Dissipation is like one person secretly spending chunks of that vacation fund on personal stuff right before the trip, reducing what's actually available for the shared goal.
That's a great analogy. And just to reiterate for clarity, the timing of this alleged dissipation is absolutely crucial, isn't it? It must fall within that specific window of contemplation of divorce or irretrievable breakdown to be considered by the court.
Absolutely critical. It's not about scrutinizing every single financial decision made throughout the entire 23 years of marriage in this case.
Right.
The focus is squarely on financial misconduct that occurs when the relationship is nearing its end, which might suggest a potential motive to unfairly reduce the marital assets available for distribution in the looming divorce.
Makes sense. And the Supreme Court's decision to vacate that joint tax filing order, it really emphasizes the limits of judicial authority in these post-divorce situations, doesn't it?
It does. Once the marriage is legally dissolved, the parties are meant to move forward as separate individuals with their own financial responsibilities and choices. Mm. It just underscores that while courts have broad powers to divide marital property and order things like alimony or child support, those powers have definite limits, particularly when it comes to dictating ongoing financial arrangements between people who are no longer married.
So for any aspiring family law attorneys listening today, Finan is definitely a case you'll want to add to your mental toolkit for Connecticut divorce law.
For sure.
It touches on fundamental principles of equitable distribution, the critical importance of adhering to procedural rules for evidence in court, and the defined boundaries of judicial authority in divorce proceedings.
Absolutely. It's a case that really illustrates the complexities of applying these legal principles to the often emotionally charged and, let's face it, factually intricate landscape of divorce.
Okay, so let's just quickly summarize the key takeaways from our deep dive into Finan v. Finan. We've covered the Connecticut Supreme Court's new temporal test for when pre-separation dissipation of marital assets can be considered specifically if it occurs in contemplation of divorce or during a period of irretrievable breakdown.
All right, that timing test.
We also emphasized the vital importance of procedural diligence, particularly properly marking all evidence during trial to ensure its admissibility and reviewability on appeal. That was a big one.
Huge. Don't forget that.
And finally, we discussed how the court clarified the limitations on judicial orders in divorce decrees, especially regarding compelling post-divorce joint financial obligations like tax filing.
Mm. Those are the core principles, really.
Yeah.
A solid understanding of these points will definitely give law students a valuable foundation in this specific area of family law practice.
So here's a final thought to maybe chew on. Given the Finan decision, how might a lawyer advise a client who suspects their spouse is secretly depleting marital assets before actually initiating divorce proceedings? What proactive steps could that client realistically take to protect their financial interests and, importantly, ensure that any evidence of such dissipation would actually be admissible in court later on?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It's a really complex situation, and Finan provides some crucial insights, but also highlights the challenges in how Connecticut courts might approach it, something to think about.